Welcome to CPA Practice Advisors Tech to Go podcast series, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists. These thought leaders tackle issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
This is Darren Root, executive editor of CPA Practice Advisor, coming to you today with episode 63 of Tech to Go. Again, I'm here with my regular co-host, Randy Johnston, who's a principal with K2 Enterprises, as well as Network Management Group Incorporated in Hutchinson, Kansas. So, Randy, welcome again today.
Well, thank you, Darren, and welcome to all our listeners. We have a lot to talk about today.
And there's a lot happening. It's that time of year, apparently.
Yeah, it's like all of the product releases converged at the same time, and some of the things we're not going to talk about today, I think, have dependencies on each other, but some of these things that have already happened will affect our buying strategies for 2012 and well beyond.
A lot of important stuff today, Randy, that I think every firm wants to pay attention to. First thing I want to kick off with today is something that you and I talked about on our last podcast, but I'm starting to hear accounting firms experiencing this now. This is this discontinuation by Microsoft of Small Business Server, something that a lot of firms have bought into for a number of years. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, in fact, it has been a wonderful product for firms of maybe even 30 users and less to use as their core Microsoft Server product. And like you, I have heard this from Anaheim to Sarasota to Boston, all of those places I've presented in the last week or so, and had a direct question about this issue. And part of the reason it's coming up, quite frankly, is that Microsoft discontinued Office Small Business Server on September 1. So clearly what people are trying to do now is look at their replacements, and they realize their licensing costs are escalated notably. The main restriction with this discontinuation is that the server code, instead of being able to buy a Small Business Server, which had SQL and Exchange and everything you needed for your up to five users, and then you could buy five user license packs beyond that, is now broken apart and has to be bought a la carte. So this idea of Windows Server first is going to take one copy of Windows Server for every two cores that you run this product on. Well, it turns out most of us have purchased or will purchase servers that have 4, 8, or 12 cores. So the very first thing we have to do, instead of buying one copy of software to run everything, we have to buy one copy of the software for every two cores. Well, your typical small CPA firm will buy servers that have 8 cores in them. Right away, then they have to buy 4 copies of Windows Server to stay compliant. That's about 4 times $1,800, or about $7,200 for what we used to spend $700 for. And that doesn't even get us our SQL or our Exchange licensing.
Well, so firms are definitely feeling this. I talked to a firm this past week, said that his normal bill for software from Microsoft was going to quadruple from the quotes that he had gotten. So sounds like that's probably the outcome of that, right?
Well, Microsoft claimed directly that they were raising the prices 22%, which they did. But because of this new core compliance, you basically, instead of getting by with one copy of the software per physical server, you may have 6 copies that are required to function. Now, there's a really high-end version of Windows Server, the Data Center Edition. And for some CPA firms, we're actually thinking that that's going to be cheaper than buying all these mini copies. And like we talked in our last podcast on this topic, for the first time in 10-plus years, I suggested that some firms should just go back to shared network-attached storage if they were going to keep things in-house. But as soon as you use Thomson products, which require SQL, or CCH products, which require SQL, you're pretty much forced into the Windows Server environment, and you also have to license SQL on the same strategy. In other words, you do it per cores being used. Now, we get a little benefit here if we use virtualization, because we can set up separate machines, let's say one for SQL, and allocate just two cores, so we only have to buy one copy of SQL and one copy of Windows Server to run a SQL server, but that's all that machine would really do is server plus SQL. And again, way more expensive than SPS.
So I never like to talk about a problem without at least making a recommendation for a solution, Randy. So it sounds to me like, you know, if I'm a small firm, you know, 5-10 people, is my solution here when I have to upgrade, I'm probably going to look to a hosting provider, whether it's Thomson, CCH, or somebody independent, and see whether moving my stuff out to the cloud makes sense. But let's just assume for a moment I decide I want to keep that on-premise. Is my result here is I need to bite the bullet and pay, you know, just pay the costs that they are now?
That's where we're at this point in time, and you're absolutely right, because the economics of this does make some of the hosting options more attractive, and it is certainly worth a consideration from any of the vendors that are out there, as you laid out. But at this point, we don't know of any recommendation other than biting the bullet and paying the licensing fees.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move forward then. So that's something that's on everybody's radar screen, and they have to be ready to understand what's going on there. All right. Next, Office 2013. Tell me what's going on with 2013 and in your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, Office 2013 it's called Release to Manufacturing. The final code was published on Thursday, October 25th. So. I've been running the beta version of this. I'm running the full released version at this point. We think the actual ship date for Office 2013, where you'd buy it retail, will be in January, much like the release to manufacturing code for Windows was done in August, and the actual retail version was released on Friday, October 26th. So the Office 2013 licensing is fairly radically different. We have the ability to do our 2013 licensing through Office 365 as a subscription, or we can buy the product outright. Now, when you buy the product outright, a key benefit of the new code is that the license allows you to install Office on up to 5 different PCs. And you can deactivate an installed copy from one or more devices so you can move it to another device. Office 2013 has a different look and feel, more of a web feel with limited graphics and more text. I wasn't very wild about it at the beginning. Probably still I'm not super wild about it because I like the little richer look. But the product runs on very small platforms much more rapidly. So I am running one of the new Microsoft Surface products that has Office 2013 installed on it. And the doggone thing is awfully quick for a tablet computer. And most of the files that I've tried at this point seem to be compatible. I wouldn't want to make any broad claims about that. But it is pretty clear that Office 2013 on a tablet is exceptionally doable. Microsoft did increase the pricing of 2013 also. To the point that the professional package is $399, and there are some other more limitations that are still in the $200 range. But a pretty good rule of thumb for all of our listeners to understand is Microsoft has effectively raised prices on their software here in 2012 by about 20%, and by the time you properly license, the net increase is closer to 30 to 40% for most CPA firms.
It's an interesting concept. You know, Apple continues to lower prices and almost give it away, and Microsoft sort of going the other way.
It's pretty fascinating. I agree with your observation on that. Now, what we believe is also happening, and I am more reticent than most of the authors, press, consultants in this area on Office 365, because Microsoft really wants us to drive towards Office 365 and use their SkyDrive and the integration between Windows 8, Microsoft Surface, and so forth. It's brilliant. But in my mind, the license agreement still makes me question if I can use it for client confidential data. The small business version of Office 365 that includes the Office 2013 licensing is $149 annually at this point. So it's designed to work for up to a 10-employee situation. So again, I'm trying to do the math, but I'm going to do it 10 times 149. You can see that your annual license cost would be, you know, $1,490 a year. So, you know, that's in the ballpark of purchasing Office outright. But typically when you purchase Office outright, you might use it for 3 or more years. So this becomes an annual fee.
Sure. So let me ask you a few questions just to make sure I understand. So Office 2013, are there any prerequisites to that? Do I need to be on any particular version of Windows? Any version of Exchange for Outlook to work? Anything there?
A beautiful question. Yes. The release documents basically say the product is only supported on Windows 7 and Windows 8. Some of the pre-release documents indicated they might support Vista, but absolutely no support for Windows XP. So you really have to be on Windows 7 or 8 is the right answer.
Okay. So for a lot of firms, that'll be doable. Office 365 versus 2013 on local drives. I know you have some licensing issues there. Do you see that essentially, and just by definition, Office 365 is the cloud-based component of Office. Am I stating that right?
That's really right, and the idea is that you can store documents, do email, and in many cases run the Office applications through a browser in Office 365. With the premium versions of the product, you have a locally installed copy of the software, which we traditionally would just call Microsoft Office.
If I have a Mac, I can work in Office 365, and I'm still just working on the same platform, or am I working on a Mac version?
You actually are working on a Mac version, and if you are on Office 365, the product installs on 5 different PCs or Macs. So if you've got a Mac in the office and a PC at home or vice versa, you get the native code for the native platform wherever you're working.
So there's a client, essentially, that downloads to my PC or Mac. But really the heavy lifting is done out in the cloud and the storage is in the cloud?
That's the intent. But the storage in the cloud, again, we'll want our listeners to read the license agreements and make sure that they're good with that, because the way the license agreement is as of earlier this week, so let's just say as of the 1st of November, that the technicians are permitted to see the files that you store in the cloud. Again, I think that's a bit of a client confidentiality issue.
Yeah.
One other key thing that I think our listeners need to know is the cloud versions are still, in my mind, irrationally disabled on certain features. So a simple thing in word processing like Microsoft Word, there's a feature called track changes, so you can see the changes in a document. Track changes is not available in Office 365 in the cloud. And what they do is they say you need to use the desktop version to get this function done. There's a number of real critical features that are missing in the Office 365 version.
So it sounds to me like, if I'm hearing you right, probably, are you ready to go to 2013, stay on 2010 a bit longer, stay away from Office 365 for a little bit? I think I'm hearing you say 2013's okay, but there's no compelling reason today to leave 2010.
There is no compelling reason to leave 2010. Over the next little while, Darren, we'll take some effort to generate accountant-centric features of 2013 to say, here's some reasons to go. I can tell you in 13, the OneNote experience is vastly superior. The Outlook and Exchange, whether it's with Exchange 2010 or 2013, wildly superior. The Excel upgrades, particularly with the insertion of Power Pivot, notably better and so forth. So I think there's enough features to call it out. Typically, in most of these versions, there's been a product or a feature that's been motivating enough for me to say, this is a business reason to go to this product. However, so many of our listeners don't use OneNote. I couldn't call out OneNote as being the reason to go, but OneNote is so much improved, it's probably worth the upgrade by itself. The released Office 2013 code, either under Windows 7 or Windows 8, and I've run it both ways, is very good. It's very quick. It's very intuitive. The menus have changed. And the copy that runs on the Microsoft Surface tablet looks and feels much the same. So I'm sure there's some differences and deficiencies I haven't figured out, but nothing that comes to mind. The vendor support of this product, Office 2013, to me is the biggest reason to move slow. But if you license this product through open licensing, you could keep your team on 2010 short term and then do some training and do an upgrade in mass to 2013 when you're ready. Similar advice we gave to Windows 8 a few podcasts ago.
Last question on this. 10 people in my office, 9 people are on 2010. I decide to go to 2013 so I can play with it. Compatibility.
So far, we have not noted any compatibility issues between 2010 and 13. There are some compatibility issues between 2007 and before in 2013. In 2010, Office 2010, Microsoft made some subtle multi-user changes that allowed this product to work better in their cloud data centers and to do multi-user Excel and multi-user Word and so forth. Many people have not discovered those features or used them, but they've been there for, you know, several years. That multi-userness is really an important compatibility thing, and that's why 10 and 13 look to be the same. So unlike when we converted to 7, or 10, we noticed very specific file conversion problems. To date, we've not found any between 10 and 13.
All right. Well, let's move on a little bit. Yesterday, I believe we went into public release of QuickBooks Online Accountant. Am I right on that?
Yes, that's correct. That was one of Intuit's largest betas. They had about 30,000 accountants use their QuickBooks Online Accountants Edition, and they made several changes to the Pro Advisor program, which were announced at Doug Sleater's conference in Anaheim on October 23rd, which included features like the ability to do 5 free tax returns with their new Intuit Tax Online. And that if you were a Pro Advisor, QuickBooks Online Accountant Edition would be included at no charge with your Pro Advisor membership. So the product is now in general release, and there are some pretty significant features to the Online Accountant Edition for our QuickBooks Online users.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to use it quite a bit as a beta user. There are some really nice features in there, things that we saw and used in QuickBooks Desktop Accountant Edition, like client data review, some of the features like reclassifying transactions, setting a period date where if you pull up every report you pull up as the accountant comes up with the right period dates or the date you specify, things like that. Some really cool features in there, having a little dashboard so you can log into different clients all from your dashboard. Those are some of the key features I've seen.
Yes, and there's some usability things that were put throughout QuickBooks Online, and a number of those things they brought across into the Accountant Edition as well. So, you know, my rule of thumb right now is whether you're a public practice accountant or whether you're an accountant in industry, if you can get access to the accountant edition of these products, we think that there's enough features in, let's say, journal entries that it's probably worth considering anyway.
I've spent a lot of time over the last few months, Randy, paying really close attention to QBO, QuickBooks Online. I see it making some pretty great strides. I see it coming along quite nicely. I actually did a webcast with Kevin Kern yesterday, who really runs QuickBooks Online for Intuit. A lot of nice things planned in the future for this product as well. They're really devoting some energy. Are you seeing the same thing?
I am seeing the same thing in a big way. You know, Intuit, at the time of our recording here, has about 360,000 users on QuickBooks Online. The uptake on new installations I think 36% is the number that Intuit quoted in the past week or so. So that means one out of three users that are brand new are selecting QuickBooks Online, more or less unprompted. That still means, by the way, two-thirds are picking QuickBooks Desktop. But some of the other features, like the automatic email reporting and the bank transaction automatically downloading every night and classifications, a couple of features like unlimited report reader and time tracking users, plus the ability to have both class and location tracking inside QuickBooks Online is a big deal. You know, Intuit has over 100 domestic programmers working on this product with 9 different product managers, of which Kevin is one. Brilliant guy. I've enjoyed traveling and working with him through the summer while we've done some events together. And those guys are listening. Kevin told me in a conversation that the 9 product managers discuss every bit of users' feedback every week. So they're trying to do what users are asking for in this product.
So some things that I'm interested in seeing in this product, and I hope, I think that Intuit will get there, are for accountants features, things that I would normally want to be able to do. I would want to be able to go in and, as an accounting firm, set my client up. Right? I like controlling that relationship. I'd like to set them up. And I'd like to be able to set them up easily, whatever that means, from some dashboard, as opposed to having the client have to set themselves up and sort of invite me in. So that's one feature that I'm really hoping that we can see at some point. Another feature that I'm really would like to see happen in QBOA is the ability to, if I can't really allocate a client to another staff member to work on, they have to log in sort of as me. I'm hoping that we can get to the point where I could say, oh, this client here, I can give that person in my firm access to that under their login. So those are two big things. The other challenge I think either we're going to have to get over as a profession or Intuit's going to have to figure out how to deal with is we've gone from, let's assume for a minute that I do bookkeeping work for clients, Randy, and I've got 10 QuickBooks Online clients. In the desktop world, I had one copy of QuickBooks and I added 10 clients, and it cost me one copy of QuickBooks. In the online world, I add 10 clients, I pay on a per company basis, and that's different than paying on a per license basis. So I think there's going to have to be some thought put into how all that plays itself out.
Yeah, I agree with you, Darren, and what you're asking for to come in the product, I'm quite optimistic those things will happen. Some other cultural things that are different about the QuickBooks Online edition is if you're going to create a new company file, many times you still have to pay to retain an old company. I think that they're going to address that problem because, you know, we've talked about that directly. You know, a few other key features, I think, in the QuickBooks Online Accountant, or as it's usually referred to internally for those guys, QBOA, the reconciliation features where you can do all of your accounts in a single snapshot view and the prior, troubleshoot prior reconciliations and undo bank reconciliations, all good things. As you pointed out on the client data review, being able to reclassify transactions in a batch or write off invoices in a batch or finding missing transactions in voided and deleted transactions reports are good. A lot of the AJEs for tracking adjustments for year end is good, plus the adjusted trial balance report is a QBOA feature. And then the current balance to prior periods with both balance sheets and profit and loss are all, you know, extra features you get by using that QBOA addition.
Easily adding another window. Let's say you have you're doing a JE, AJE, and you want to see out the effect on the income statement or balance sheet, opening another window so that you can have them, and if you have two screens, you can have them side by side.
Yes, absolutely. So when you start thinking about that, and then you go back and say, look, there's three versions of this QuickBooks Online product. You know, it's about $40 for five users and about $27 for three users, as I recall, and then the very entry-level product's about $13. You know, we've got the users out there paying those types of rates, and we've really wound up able to connect with QBOA on the back end to these accounts. So we're getting most of what's there, not to mention the payroll features where, you know, Intuit is trying to drive payments through their pay system and payroll through their systems to really wind up integrating these things together.
I think what we're saying, Randy, here is this is a product to pay attention to. It's going to affect every firm, one level or another over the next few years.
I think so. And, you know, in prior podcasts, we discussed how many SaaS-based or software-as-a-service runs-in-a-browser-type of products are evolving. And let's face it, most of these ones that we're talking about frequently today, like QuickBooks Online or Intacct or NetSuite, those all started in the late 90s. It's taken them about 10 years to mature. But there's a number of other new products that are competitors that have come along, Xero being one that we've talked about in the past. Another new SaaS product that was introduced this past week, Monchilla, has an accountant-centric and payroll system built into it. And I think in prior podcasts, I'd suggested that maybe as many as 23 new products have been created. Well, right now, my count's up to 26. And I just discovered three of those in the last month. And it's like, wow, how come I didn't know about this one? And, you know, one of them in particular been around 3 years. I couldn't believe I hadn't discovered it. So for our listeners, it's going to be hard for you to discover some of these products. But I do believe for the entry-level business in the United States, QuickBooks Online will continue to be one to be measured against, and it's pretty clear that they've got significant share with, you know, 300,000 plus right now.
So lastly, in the time we have left, Randy, I received my QuickBooks Enterprise, so desktop version, 13, which also I got my QuickBooks Premier Accountants Edition 2013, in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, one of the things to notice is a complete interface change, which I personally have really enjoyed, as has my staff. Talk a little bit about what went on with this interface change.
Oh, well, in a single word, wow. And radical might have been a second word. I mean, this is the most significant change in the QuickBooks desktop interface that we have seen maybe since 2006, and even that wasn't as big as an interface change as this was. I think that Intuit very specifically was trying to make the product more modern, to give it a bit more of the ribbon look and feel, to make it more tablet-friendly for navigation, to improve the workflow, to wind up with commonly used menu items inside forms. I think that was part of what they were after. They wanted shortcuts available anywhere in the product, so they allowed you to create shortcuts to go to specific things that you're using, like reports or, you know, a particular transaction. Consolidation information became more important, so the support for that at the right level of products was in there. And I think there's a lot of everyday usage things that wound up being reconstructed in this version. So if we look back at Intuit's culture over the last 3 to 5 years, they've been trying to make the product easier to use in incremental steps. And I think what happened is they finally concluded they'd have to re-architect the user interface to really make as many steps as they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And that really wound up being the deal. The focus around making it faster for accountants to use the product was one of the top motivators in the changes that are in here.
I believe they accomplished that. You know, oftentimes new interfaces take a little while to get used to. This one's pretty solid. I'm pretty happy with it. Two things that I want to mention before we get off. One, as we were talking about QuickBooks Online, to date there has been no document attach feature. So, you know, you're talking about clients going to the cloud, but you're telling them to file documents in a file cabinet, if you will, a real file cabinet. As of, I believe, November 28th, I want to say, 6th or 8th of this month, November 26th or 8th, Smart Vault is releasing their integration with QuickBooks Online. I've looked at it. It's pretty slick. It's very nice. So that's something to pay attention to. So QuickBooks Online can be paperless.
Yeah.
And two, the document attach feature inside of QuickBooks continues to improve. Apparently, they've gotten rid of their document center in the cloud, and now it's locally stored.
And so those two document strategies are kind of, let's call it, forebearers of what's to come. And I do absolutely agree. I've seen the new Smart Vault interface. It is absolutely worth watching. So as our listeners are trying to navigate their technology changes, we may suggest that short term that maybe you don't jump on Windows 8 or Office 2012, 2013 right away here in 2012. Maybe you put those things off to 2013. But I do think that what Intuit's done with QuickBooks Desktop Edition, with QuickBooks Online, what Eric's done with Smart Vault for the integrations, those things are worth productivity gains right now. There'll be a learning curve on those products, but it looks like to me it's worth the pain of learning right now. And I probably would put off the pain of learning on Windows 8 and Office 2013 just a little bit, but you've got a budget for all of that Microsoft infrastructure replacement, most likely for our listeners in 2013.
Well, Randy, great session today. A lot of good information. So much for trying to keep these things a little shorter for people. It was just too much today. Good job, though.
Yeah.
Appreciate all your info.
Pleased to do it, but I got to tell you, we've got so much more that we could have still talked about because the Surface review is a good example, which I've written up, the new iPad Mini, which has, you know, been released.
Yep.
We've got so doggone many more things. I guess I'm looking forward to the next time we talk because it'll probably be just as packed.
Absolutely. Are you going to be at any of the user conferences coming up this early November?
Yes, as a matter of fact, personally, I'll be at the CCH conference and have just come, as you heard, from Sleater and Ran One. Thompson conference is on the radar, Cloud Nine conference is on the radar. The rescheduled because of the storm, Digital CPA, that's one I'm hoping to be able to get to, but calendar doesn't look very good right now. So, yes, we are going to be at a lot of these events. So hopefully we can see our listeners at those events and get a chance to talk directly.
Outstanding. Well, I'll see you soon, and I want to thank our listeners for listening. So thanks, Randy.
All the best to all of you.
For more info on the CPA Practice Advisor programs and our e-newsletter, visit cpapracticeadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 1-800-456-0864, extension 2107, or tune into future episodes where you'll be able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.